Eric Troutman is a comic book author who lives in the northwest of the United States. He is currently the author of Red Sonja and the writer for Vampirella, two comic book series that are having a good run right now. He joined us for about an hour to talk about a number of things, including those two comic books, how he writes, and his love of music. He also sat down to talk about his work on Halo, the video games. That portion of the interview can be found in The Science Fiction Show, episode 005. Eric was gracious enough to spend some time with us. Here's the interview with Eric Troutman. All right, so let's start it out with the easy stuff. Who would be a better prom date, Red Sonja or Vampirella?
Wow, neither is an optimal choice. Sonja would be tough to convince to go, and Vampirella, well, I'm not a tall man, and Vampirella is like 7 feet tall. That's embarrassing. Of the two, I'd probably have to say...
A redhead. How about a redhead? No?
I'd probably have to say Vampirella, just because of the whole I have to defeat her in combat thing.
I'm not that dedicated
to the prom.
Well, you've had some good success with Vampirella, and you've had some success with Red Sonja, and the big success of the debut issue with Vampirella and all those things. Were you surprised by that success at all?
In the case of Vampirella, I was stunned. Initial fan response to the notion of the costume was not resoundingly positive. Like, I got something like 430 pieces of hate mail inside 2 hours when that first black and white teaser image hit the net.
And that was for putting pants on her or something like that?
Yeah. I was compared to Frederick Wortham. I was called a PC Nazi. And my personal favorite was being told that I was, and I quote, a Hitler.
I read that.
That was pretty funny.
How someone goes from pants to Hitler is beyond me, but...
Yeah, I know.
One of the top diamond sellers...
I don't know how familiar you are with how Diamond does certain major publishers, and I suspect, and I don't know this definitively, so I'm just kind of guessing, certain publishers pay to be premier publishers, so it's DC, Marvel... You know, Image.
Dark Horse,
I'm sure.
Okay.
Possibly Oni, but I'm not positive. Mm-hmm. And then there's everybody else. So there's almost like two different sales lists. So it wasn't like I beat out Brightest Day or anything, but the number one selling non-premiere title in the month of its debut was Vampirella number one. And I couldn't be happier. I was very pleased.
The thing that weirded me about you being called a Hitler for the pants thing was, you know, they threw pants on Wonder Woman and nobody seemed to give a damn.
Oh, untrue, boy. It wasn't as vitriolic as what I got for Vampirella, but people were initially very, very upset.
I exaggerated a little bit there, but yeah. I think what nobody really cared about, apparently, was the TV show, which was canceled. I think was canceled in a shorter span of time than you and I have been talking right now.
It was dispiriting to see that happen. Gail Simone made the point that's like, you know, you can fix a show that isn't great. You can't fix it if there's nothing to fix. And I was kind of disappointed to see one of the, you know, basically the straw that broke the camel's back, I think, was the initial fan outcry about what was ostensibly just a costume reference shot.
Yeah.
You know?
That was you know, big news. I mean, you picked that up on Twitter right away. And even CNN, I think, carried some kind of a decent piece on it, which is what I think drew my attention to it initially.
It was unfortunate. And, of course, I was in the throes of being told I was a fascist for putting pants on Vampirella. So people complained, but her boots aren't red. I was like, shut up.
You know, between Wonder Woman, Reds, I think the success, a friend and I were speaking about Wonder Woman specifically. And Wonder Woman in the 70s, the Linda Carter series, was still riding high on women's liberation and that whole movement. It seemed like that was just a natural for that back then. And there doesn't seem to be a place for a series like that, but Red Sonja and Vampirella seem to be selling well as books. Do you do well with women?
It's about half and half on Vampirella, and it's much more heavily weighted towards females on Red Sonja. But I have my readership. I mean, I don't have any real empirical data. It's just kind of anecdotal based on convention appearances and correspondence, but I seem to have a higher percentage of female readers than male anyway. I suspect part of that comes from having worked with Greg Rucka for so long because, you know, he's sort of the prototype of the male feminist writer in comics right now, and I sort of apprenticed under him.
Yeah.
So I think I may have gotten some of his audience by osmosis.
What draws you to these two titles? They're both about women. They're both scantily clad, but, I mean, all joking aside, What attracts you to this kind of strong female central character that you like to write?
Well, in the case of Vampirella and Red Sonja, the publisher asked me.
Yeah.
That's always very alluring and enticing. It's like, hey, we'll pay you to write books.
That's always a great reason. Exactly, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, certainly there's no shortage of powerful female figures in my life, not the least of which is my own wife.
Who runs the comic book store for you. We'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah. She's a she's a pretty type A gal, and you know, often we'll be having a conversation or something, and I'll just grab my little notebook and, you know, yep, read Sonia would say that, you know.
Interesting. How'd the con go?
Fantastic. Nathan O'Brien and the Sasquatch Comic Club that put on the Spokane convention, it seems to be growing by leaps and bounds. I think there's probably twice as many people that showed up this year over last year. This is the fourth year for me, and it's the fifth year for the con. They take really good care of us. They're super friendly. They're super well organized. It's a really laid back show. It's very positive and upbeat. Yeah, it's that and Emerald City are probably my two favorite cons right now.
Plus, they're close to home, right?
Yeah, well, close-ish. Emerald City is certainly closer. It's 5 or 6 hours in a car one way with Brandon Jarwa on the way out to Spokane, which has its own challenges. But
right, and which, based on your Twitter conversations about Brandon, are probably fun rides up.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, we're horrible to each other on Twitter. We really are. But, I mean, don't worry. We're actually like that to each other in real life, too.
Nice.
No, he's a really good friend and a very, very talented writer in his own right, and we collaborate very well together. And this year was actually a much more mellow trip than last year. We genuinely enjoy each other's company, and you know, we bounce ideas back and forth. It's like a little, you know, story summit on wheels. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. What do you gain from attending a con, or what is your, you know, through you, what is your publisher gain?
For the larger cons, obviously it's exposure. It's a lot easier for me to sell somebody on Vampirella if they're skeptical, by kind of giving them a little rundown, you know, like if they're turned off by the, you know, the classic costume on the cover, I can point out right there for them, look, see, it's not that in the book, and vice versa. Like, hey, if you're upset about the costume, but look, it's a 7-foot-tall vampire in red Armani kicking vampires in the face, and that's still sexy. Just hand selling. I'm at that point in my career where making a connection with the audience and, you know, getting them to give me a chance is very valuable. I don't know what my publisher gains from it other than, you know, whatever minimal exposure I do from hand selling for, you know, 6 to 8 hours. But that's probably the biggest thing. I mean, personally, I enjoy the interaction with fans for the most part. It's a lot of fun.
Do you get a lot of folks for that con?
For Spokane? I don't know what the actual numbers were. I think last year it was like 500 or 600, and you know, my apologies to Nathan and the crew if I'm grossly underestimating that. I think it was probably closer to 1,000 this year, which was really good for a small con.
You're kind of a 5-tool player, and you can kind of cover all the bases. I don't know if you're a sports fan or not.
Soccer and hockey.
Okay. I think you're a Canadiens fan, if I understood correctly.
Yeah, that was one of my... That's one of those guilty burdens I bear.
It's all right. My Red Wings got knocked out a while ago. Art, writing, design, illustration... Is there anyone you favor over another? I mean, do you prefer writing? Do you like illustration? Or what do you prefer to do more?
I'm not really much of an illustrator, actually. Graphic design, logo design, page layout, that kind of stuff. I enjoy them both. Both have their advantages and disadvantages. Like, I can write pretty quickly, so I can get a lot of variety in what I'm working on from day to day, and I like that. But every once in a while, I like to kind of cleanse the palette and do some graphic design stuff. I've done a couple album covers and some logo design and stuff like that. And that's always fun. It's just, it's flexing different muscles.
Does it give you a different perspective when you're working with the other creators for Red Sonja and Vampirella?
Oh, well, certainly, you know, I have enough practical knowledge of the tool set to be able to give very concrete suggestion and guidance where I think it's necessary in a language that the other guy gets. I know some writers who are just like, I can't draw a straight line. I wouldn't at all have that conversation with the artist. But, you know, I mean, I have a pretty good sense of page construction and the kind of dynamics of how panels should flow, and can work pretty closely with an illustrator and not have that illustrator feel like I'm smothering them.
Right. Okay.
Mostly because I can speak the language.
I read somewhere
I've been blessed with some really fantastic artists. It's not as common as you would think in comics that, like, hey, it's a team of people who all know each other and kind of, hey, let's put on the show right here. Often I've written a script or two before I even know who the artist is.
Yeah.
And that's challenging.
Challenging because you don't know their nuances, or...
I don't know what they like to draw.
Okay.
You're going to get the best work out of the illustrator if he's drawing something, he or she's drawing something that they like to draw. You know, I've been really lucky at DC. You know, there's Marco Rudy and Don Kramer and, you know, Walter Giovanni and Wagner Rice to Dynamite. Like, I've had some really, really good guys who are good at doing a wide variety of things, which makes my life easier. And that tends to manifest in the scripts, too. When I first started on The Shield with Marco, you know, I didn't know him, so I wrote a very detailed first-issue script. But by issue 7, I literally wrote one panel description as, we really need a cool big-ass fight here. Do your thing.
I mean, nice.
I didn't need it, you know, and that's so liberating to know that I just say that, and Marco's going to go off, and he's going to deliver an amazing sequence, and I don't have to worry about it. Yeah. I get to be blown away by it when it comes in, and that's always that's the fun stuff.
I would imagine in other mediums, like movies and others, you do have to be more detailed when you don't know the players as closely, and you certainly outline that. Needless to say, we don't get a lot of comics here. They're just not here. You can go into the exchanges here, and there's a few books there, but to try to keep up with that continuity, it's a great point you bring up. It's just it's difficult at best. So yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about.
Well, and they're not priming the pump for the next generation very well. Finding good all-ages books that don't scream, this is a kiddie book, and thus turn off that market. Are few and far between. And when they do them, and they do them well, they're marketed very poorly. My friend Chris Somney, who drew the first DC work I ever did, Checkmate 17, illustrated a book called Thor the Mighty Avenger, and I think it was Roger Landridge who wrote it, and it was astonishingly good. It was one of the best comics on the shelf, and that book got unceremoniously canceled. I don't think it made it a year.
I read about that just a few weeks ago. Yeah, I know
it's
exactly.
It's a terrific book. Mm-hmm. It's particularly in light of the Thor movie, it's like the perfect thing to hand to a kid who walked out of the Thor movie wanting more Thor. Supergirl Cosmic Adventures in the Eighth Grade was a terrific read. You know, it was great for, again, young female readers who, you know, let's face it, they don't see themselves in a lot of modern comics. It was hysterically funny, beautifully drawn, and again,
you said a couple times that you follow creators and not necessarily characters, but is there a book you want to work on?
Superman.
Why Superman?
The maudlin answer is one of the first comics I ever bought with my own money was an issue of Superman. It was in the 170s, I think. I'd have to look it up. It's been years. It was back when actually Whitman was distributing DC books. It still had the Whitman bug in the corner.
I remember that.
It was the introduction of the Master Jailer, who incidentally was the protagonist of my first issue of Checkmate. And I bought that comic in the hospital gift shop where my grandfather was dying. So there's always been kind of a strong association with me with the character of Superman. As saccharine as this sounds, it's that imprinted really strongly on me. It's like you need him and he's there. I would love to do an all-ages Superman book. He's such an iconic character. Mm-hmm. The trick is to have him not come across as kind of stuffy and parental. But
Kicked by Batman in another book. Yeah.
Buck Rogers, The Shadow, The Rocketeer, like kind of the pulpy stuff, which should come as no surprise to you with your familiarity with Crimson Skies. Like, yeah. I'm a pulp junkie. That's not a shock.
Who are your writing mentors? You mentioned Roy Thomas. I noted that you were a Howard Chaykin fan. I'm a huge Howard Chaykin guy. Who are your top three?
My top three in terms of just people whose
people
work
you
admire,
people you or, say this is why I write.
Well, in terms of the comics, I mean, Greg Rucka has been hugely influential and inspirational to me, and
because
he just writes these really, really beautiful characters. Like he really knows those characters inside and out. When I first started working with him, he was still doing Wonder Woman, I think, and I found it interesting that anytime he was talking about Wonder Woman, he never called her Wonder Woman. Always called her Diana, and it wasn't affect. It wasn't look at me be pretentious writer guy. He doesn't think of her as Wonder Woman. He thinks of her as Diana, and he knows that character. And any character he's writing, he knows that character inside out. He knows what makes them tick. I was always much more of a plot heavy writer and much weaker on character. I picked up an awful lot just kind of watching him do his thing, and I think I benefited greatly from it. Frankly, Warren Ellis is another guy. Like, I love watching that guy's work continually evolve, you know, and he wears his chops on his sleeve in a lot of ways. Like, he's always posting his own research links and, you know, and he writes more intelligently about the nature of comics than virtually anyone else I've ever read. You know, Will Eisner, obviously.
Yeah.
He's a big one. Yeah. Picking three is tough.
Yeah.
Chaykin was a big one. I had the good fortune to work with him briefly on a project at Microsoft, a Crimson Skies project, in fact. He had written a series of linked novellas that we were going to do as kind of a coffee table art book, and for a variety of reasons didn't happen, but I made sure he got paid. He seemed to like me okay. Well, the first phone call I had with him, you know, he was in L.A. and I was in Redmond, and we go through kind of the initial meet and greet, and here's what the project looks like, And finally, at the end of this like hour phone call, I was like, I gotta say, let me just get it out of the way. I've been a huge fan for years. This is a real treat for me to be working with you. And just pause. Because you liked all that Star Wars shit, didn't you? Which, you know, well, yeah, but, and then I mentioned that, you know, a Solomon Kane thing you had done that I really liked.
Tell me a little bit about how you write, and when like when do you write at night? Do you write in the day? Where do you write? Tell me a little bit about that.
Let's see where to start. I tend to, when I'm at home, my wife and I own this comic shop here in Lacey, Washington, mm-hmm. Olympic Cards and Comics. I'm not in the store 7 days a week. I'm only in like two or three. And normally, you know, we get up in the morning. I see my wife off, hop right in the shower, and then hit the kitchen table and whip open the laptop, work for a couple hours. We live so far out in the middle of nowhere that I don't have a landline, internet access, you know. It's pretty remote, so I have to drive about 10 minutes into town to a local coffee shop that lets me monopolize a corner booth and soak up their Wi-Fi. And they close at about 3 Pacific time, which is basically, you know, when offices are shutting down on the East Coast where all my publishers are.
Right.
I tend to work almost exclusively on the laptop unless I'm really, really blocked, and then I'll switch to longhand. And I tend to work from fairly detailed outlines that end up getting fuzzier and fuzzier and telling the editor eventually, just trust me, it'll be great. No, I tend to write pretty detailed outlines, and then I'll... once I have the outline, I'll do what I call my beat sheet, where I've broken down, it's essentially my scene list. And, you know, this scene has to happen in this order and accomplish the following plot and character development beats. And once I figured out my sort of page budget for each scene, I can go right to script. I tend to write full script, very full script.
So are you big on details? Are you like, the cup should have this eagle on it or that sort of thing?
Particularly when I'm first working with a guy I don't know.
Yeah.
I like to give that guy as much of detail as possible and go... use what works.
Okay.
You know, and I tend to, when I'm establishing a scene, that first panel description is very, very long. Here's everything that you need to know that's in this scene. Mm-hmm. You don't have to include it all. Mm-hmm. Just don't contradict it, because this is going to be a plot element later, and this is going to be a plot element later, and here are the key things that have to be established. And that helps kind of build a consistent environment that mm-hmm. I'm moving people through. Mm-hmm. In the Perfect Dark comic I did, for example, one character, there's a scene very early on when Joanna Dark like slams her fist down on her boss's desk and it knocks over a picture. Mm-hmm. And you only get a glimpse of that picture, and it's of this woman and her sister. By the end of issue 6, you realize that this woman has been acting as a double agent because her sister has been held hostage. But like, so it was established really subtly mm-hmm. early on and then brought out later. But it's like, I really like having those subtle touches in early. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't feel like, and then we randomly dropped in a new character. I tend to write each script in a couple of stages. I'll go through and I'll do all of the panel descriptions first. You know, page 1, panel 1, we see this. Then panel 2, we see this. Then panel 3, we see this, etc. And then I'll go back through again and I'll do all the dialogue and captions and sound effects and stuff. Because mm-hmm. I found when I was writing them more linearly, the dialogue was coming across as really stilted. Yeah, and in something like JSA versus Cobra, which had two narrators often commenting on the scenes going on with their opposite number, I ended up having to write those things in like 4 passes. It's almost like painting in coats.
I see, yeah. Strengths and weaknesses.
Well, I'm awesome. I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm not a good one to judge my own strengths other than I think I have a good sense of plot. I think I've developed a reasonably good sense of character and action. I think where I'm weak is, I'm sure my editor would like my scripts to come in a little faster. Oh, that was your other part of the question. I'm sorry. Let me circle back to that first. Once I've gotten something plot-wise where I know where we're going, once I've got the beat sheet and stuff, I can generally crank out an entire script in about 8 hours to 10 hours.
Oh, okay.
I've done it in as little as 4. But average burn, including all of the plot development time, is about a week per script, or a little less. So let's see. Where were we?
Just talking strengths and weaknesses. You mentioned, I heard you say plot. I was just curious if you felt like, is there enough room in comics to develop characters the way you want to do versus, say, a novel or something more long form?
Oh, I would say it's just about right for the kind of character development I want to do.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy writing prose, as my long-suffering literary agent can attest. In fact, the thing that was closest to completion is a novel. I ended up selling it to Vertigo as a graphic novel, much to my agent's annoyance. But I don't enjoy prose. I've done it. I don't like it. I can't do what Greg does. Greg, I've seen him bang out a complete and excellent novel in like a matter of weeks, but it's clearly miserable. Like, he's, you know, he comes out of those and he's got the 1,000-yard stare. He's like, can't talk, must go cry, you know, because he works really hard at it. And he's got a much better understanding of that form than I do. I probably had a better understanding of it when I was still actively pursuing it. And I've kind of let a lot of that mm-hmm. go to focus on comic stuff, which mm-hmm. I just prefer. I prefer the immediacy of it. You know, I like that I write a Red Sonja script and within anywhere from 6 to 10 weeks on talking to someone about it. Like, there's an actual conversation about it with the reader.
Which,
you know, with a novel, you spend a year researching and writing it, then maybe a year getting it published. So by the time somebody wants to talk to you about it, that's 2 years
ago. So I'm going to see Iron Maiden next Tuesday. Are you a fan?
Nope, not a huge one.
No, but you are a music fan.
I am, mostly blues.
Mostly blues. I, you know, my, again, I go back to Baron last week, and you know, he's a big fan of power pop, and I just noticed this to be a trend with a lot of comic book writers, big music nuts. You've been a big music fan most of your life?
Oh yeah, I play a few different instruments and played in bands, and my my music collection is pretty eclectic.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not a big pop guy. I actually use music a lot in my writing.
I was going to say, how does that help fuel what you do?
When I first did Checkmate, my first DC work, the main character, the narrator, was Carl Draper, formerly the Master Jailer, and now a reformed villain in charge of Checkmate's headquarters physical security.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing started when I asked Greg, because he asked me to come on the book with him. Like, you've established that Checkmate's headquarters is called the Castle. It's up on an Alp somewhere in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And members of Checkmate, metahuman and non-metahuman, are there under the UN Security Council auspices. So basically every major military and intelligence service in the free world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means the location of the castle is now also in the hands of every criminal organization, a terrorist group in the world. Why is that castle not under constant attack 24/7? And Greg just kind of looked at me and went, I don't know. I was like, okay, here's your answer. They hired the Master Jailer who once trapped Superman to provide for their security. And, you know, so he's a tech wizard. And to kind of get into his head, I went out and downloaded a whole bunch of electronic music, which I had not been a fan of.
Mm-hmm. So like Paul Oakenfold type stuff, Paul Van Dyke?
Oakenfold and I Am Robot and Proud, mm-hmm. and, you know, like all sorts of, you know, random, a lot of unsigned bands, mm-hmm. a lot of stuff. I just mm-hmm. went out and found like a ton of it. Yeah, Orbital, Daft Punk, that was my mm-hmm. first exposure to Daft Punk.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Brandon is in a very well-known Seattle area industrial and electronic band called SD6, and I had recently met him at that point, had bought his CD and was like, that's fantastic. And that was sort of my entree into that world, because mm-hmm. I could call him and go, what would this guy be listening to? And he gave me a great playlist. And I found he wrote much easier when I had that stuff played in my headphones. I have a Vampirella playlist. I have a Perfect Dark playlist. I had a thematically appropriate one for this Vertigo book I can't really talk about yet.
What's on the Red Sonja playlist?
A lot of film soundtracks and TV show soundtracks. Obviously, the Conan the Barbarian, both movie and video game soundtracks. The soundtrack to Age of Conan is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The Ennio Morricone Red Sonja soundtrack, some Xena TV show theme stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of swirling orchestral. The Lord of the Rings stuff, some Braveheart, a lot of James Horner.
Well, Eric, I appreciate your time. It's grateful. I'd love to spend an hour with you. I'm glad I got some insight on some things that I think a lot of folks were interested in, and appreciate your time, and thanks very much, and I hope your throat gets better soon.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. The chloroseptic here by my side has helped tremendously.
What's the website for your comic book store so I can point people in that direction?
Sure, it's www.olympiccardsandcomics, all spelled out, .com. My own website is Eric Trautman, TRAUTMANN.US. Can be found on Twitter at Mercury Eric, and I'm on the Facebooks and stuff too. So,
well, Eric, thanks again. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.